Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. That's right, it's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week. Through the lens of original thought, and it's good to have everybody back as we head into the deepest, coldest, most frigid part of the winter, mid-December up through, I guess, about mid-February. Right, that's about the depths of it. Kind of a depressing time of year, except for Christmas. I like Christmas. I like celebrating the... I like watching the rest of the world pay lip service to the idea that the light of the world hung on a tree and celebrating the birth of the Son of God. I like to watch them pay lip service to that because it is an opening for some people. And that's why we're here, is to open up people to the potential for eternal life. All of us will have eternal existence. Some of us will have eternal life. Stick around, listen to the show, and we will try to help you understand how and why that might occur for you. But first, we're going to go to Washington, D.C., where we check in with News Channel 9, no doubt, a local affiliate of one of the networks there in Washington. I think this is Washington State, actually, because, well, I'll just read the story. A Great Pyrenees dog from Georgia named Casper has been nominated for Farm Dog of the Year. That's right. Casper killed 8 coyotes that were threatening his pregnant partner and the sheep on his Georgia farm. Pregnant partner? Okay. That's what tipped me off that this is probably an affiliate of one of the major networks, is that the Urinalist used the term pregnant partner in a story about dogs. Since it's about dogs, we can safely assume that Casper's pregnant partner was a female, because this is dogs after all. Casper, they say... Now, this is all alleged because we don't have video evidence or proof. We don't have, but it's alleged that Casper took out 3 coyotes that made it inside the pen. He then leaped a 4-foot hog wire fence to go after the rest of the pack and killed 5 more coyotes. Go, Casper. Hoorah. Man, that feels good. We've been dealing with a coyote issue here at the McBurney compound, well, pretty much ever since we homesteaded out here. But it's gotten particularly acute over the past 6 months or so. We've set traps. We have rifles. We are intent on killing the coyotes, but we have not managed to trap the coyote or get the coyote into a position where we can shoot the coyote. And so maybe our next step will be to get ourselves a Pyrenees, because what could be finer than coming out and finding your Pyrenees atop a pile of how many coyotes was it? There were 11 in the pack, and the dog apparently killed, my goodness, 8 of them. Wow. See your Pyrenees atop a pile of 8 dead coyotes? That would be fantastic. Anyway, for those of you who may not be aware, hog wire is not barbed wire. It's a welded metal fence, little metal squares. And you can get it up to 8 feet tall. This Pyrenees jumped a 4-foot hog wire fence. So we intend, if we have our way on the McBurney compound, we intend to surround the entire compound with an 8-foot version of the hog wire with 1 foot buried underground, 7 feet above ground. So that would be, that's our dream. Our dream homestead, 8 feet of hog wire, 1 foot underground to stop them from digging, 7 feet, and then electrify the whole thing and then set up machine gun towers. Well, maybe not the machine gun towers. Meanwhile, let's go into the deep, dark file. This is, it doesn't get much darker than this. From Reuters, days before the attack of October 7th on southern Israel by the fanatic militant barbarians of Hamas, stock market traders appeared to anticipate events. A short interest in the Israeli stock exchange, their ETF, suddenly and significantly spiked on October 2nd. This is according to official data gained from FINRA, the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, who keep track of such things. Stock traders at least appear to have known something was happening. The story goes on. Just before the attack, short selling of Israeli securities increased dramatically. Short selling predicts a drop in the market, which happened after the slaughter and the war started. Reuters reports that traders informed about the coming attacks profited. So I just wonder who and where. And shouldn't we know if FINRA has kept track of all this? Shouldn't there be a record of who and where? Because I want to know, were they all Muslims? Were some of them Western? Were some of them members of the Democrat Party? Were some of them members of the Biden administration? Were some of them Jews? Were some of them Republicans? I want to know who. Who and where are the people who knew the invasion was coming and profited from it? They should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. And I want to know who they are. If Reuters can publish a story on the data, I would assume that there's someone at FINRA that knows who these people are. You don't trade stocks secretly, do you? Or maybe you do. I don't really know. I've never been into the stock market. But that's just, it doesn't get much darker or deeper or darker than that. That's, although this, my next story is borderline close to that deep and dark. This is from the Trump derangement syndrome file, where we report on continued suffering in the world from Trump derangement syndrome. It's a serious thing. And now it's reared its ugly head, according to the conservative treehouse. It's reared its ugly head on the pages of the Washington Post. Well, that, now that's not unusual, right? That's not unusual. But to this level, it's, listen to this, the husband of State Department official Victoria Nuland. She's the architect of the crisis that has fomented in the Middle East since America abandoned the Iranian uprising. I think that was 2009 or maybe 2011. When Barack Obama abandoned the Iranian uprising, since then, Victoria Nuland and a host of other girls, Barry Obama among them, have fomented strife throughout the world, especially in the Middle East, on into Ukraine, and so on and so forth. Victoria Nuland is one of them, one of the chief architects of the collapse and fall of Western civilization. The decline and fall. Did I say the collapse and fall? That's, well, Victoria Nuland squats atop it. Trust. All right. So her husband's name is Robert Kagan, and he wrote an op-ed in what the conservative treehouse author calls the CIA newsletter. That's the Washington Post, owned, by the way, by Amazon.com, Jeff Bezos. Robert Kagan, husband of Victoria Nuland, wrote, "Let's stop the wishful thinking and face reality. The path to dictatorship is getting shorter every day. In 13 weeks, Trump will have locked up the Republican nomination. Are we going to do anything about it? Should we be taking every conceivable measure to stop it, including many things that might not work, but that, given the magnitude of the crisis, must be tried anyway? Will those who balked when the risk was merely political suddenly discover courage when the cost might be oneself and one's family? Unquote. That is the paranoid rantings of, a deep state operative's husband basically calling for the assassination of Donald Trump. This article is designed to push some fringe, unstable person over the edge, and so that the CIA can recruit them and then go kill Donald Trump. I know that's a conspiracy theory. I know. I apologize for drifting into that anything like that could ever happen, because, you know, we live in a sane and predictable world where. So, anyway, this is author, Robert Kagan, he should be arrested. This shouldn't be allowed to foment this. You know, this is reminiscent of the language of Winston Churchill after Hitler dismembered Czechoslovakia. If you don't know your history, the Western European powers basically allowed Hitler to take Yugoslavia, tear it apart, murder tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people just in the initial. And Churchill called his nation to action. And this language being used by these government operatives, deep state operatives, I think that Robert Kagan and Victoria Nuland think they are Winston Churchill, and that Donald Trump is Hitler. The people who hate Trump think he's Hitler. And so when you look back on history, you can't help but say, boy, I wish someone would have assassinated Hitler. And so that's how we end up here. This is Trump derangement syndrome to the extreme. And it could lead to, well, I've been predicting that Trump would either be arrested with a coat over his head in handcuffs doing the perp walk, or that he would be assassinated since the seizure of the government by the criminally insane sex cult that seized power and installed Joe Biden, Barry Obama, and other girls. All right, but let's move away from that, because that's very distasteful. That's very distasteful. Let's go now into the insurrection file. Speaking of predictions, so what is it that's going to disrupt the 2024 election? What is it? What do you think it is? I have a number of ideas. I have a number of stories in the show today that'll point to some of my prognostications or uneasy feelings about what it might be, but something is going to have to disrupt the 2024 election. The die is cast on that. That is predestined. Something must disrupt Donald Trump from winning a fair Democratic election. That's all there is to it. And if you don't think that's true, you're naive. But what will it be? Well, it could be, listen to this, from CNN, an ongoing onslaught of threats against public officials threatens to disrupt the American machinery of government. Whoa, that's right. Flare-ups could prove a harbinger. A harbinger? That sounds scary. Threats have targeted election officials, advocating dangerous hate crimes. That's right. The CNN tells us that the director of the International Center for the Study of Violent Extremism says of the people fomenting and executing this surge of threats, she says, quote, they are really scary because they can take down a democracy, unquote. That was the scared girl telling us about the takedown of democracy. Folks, something has got to take down democracy before the 2024 election. And so this frightened millennial girl at the head of the Center for the Study of Violent Extremism, she basically, this is, could it be death threats against public officials? Could it be the death of some prominent public officials that cause law enforcement to clamp down on the election? Could it be the unfortunate, untimely passing, violently, of a number of prominent governing officials on both sides of the aisle, by the way? It's the Weekly Worldview. That's right. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us as we ponder what it might be that takes down democracy, disrupts the 2024 election, and other interesting. From the widespread panic file, we go to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The director there is Mandy. Oh, Mandy. You came and you gave without taking. Oh, Mandy Cohen, over at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The Postmillennial reports that Mandy says, protect yourself and your family this holiday season. Take the steps that we do every year. You know, stay up to date with your vaccinations for COVID and flu. You know, like every year. Get inoculated against RSV as well, you know, like we do every year, says Mandy. She also recommends, quote, use additional layers of protection. Avoid people who are unclean. I mean sick. Avoid people who are sick. Wash your hands. Improve ventilation and wear a mask, you know, like we do every year, like we've always done. Unquote, says Mandy. Okay, so the one thing she said that made sense in all of that was wash your hands. I mean, do we really need to pay someone $200,000 a year atop a bureaucracy that costs us $40 billion, trillion, zillion a year to encourage us to wash our hands? I mean, I could just go to my mom. Anyway, but there you have it. Cohen, that's her name, Mandy Cohen. Says that don't worry too much, although, you know, you should probably be on edge. But don't worry, Mandy will continue to monitor the myriad of respiratory illnesses. And at the end of her announcement, told everyone, stay safe. And the wink there, stay safe. What does that mean, stay safe? What is that? That's one of the most meaningless platitudes ever concocted by someone just trying to be overly nice. Stay safe. Like, what? Anyway, when it comes to people like Mandy Cohen, and who's the other, Victoria Nuland, and the other girls that surround Barack Obama atop the pile of the criminally insane pile of cultists who've seized the government. When it comes, it's almost Churchillian, right? Never have so many said so little while using so many words. Just embarrassing. Just embarrassing. All right. So maybe that's it. If it's not the assassination of Donald Trump or the untimely, unfortunate passing of a number of high-profile politicians, it could be the scourge of another pandemic, although that seems a little difficult to pull that one off again, but maybe, you never know. And then, of course, it could be a climate catastrophe. That's right, from the widespread panic file. Webache reports that five important natural thresholds risk being crossed by the 2030s, okay, which is soon enough to be scary, for crying out loud. Five natural thresholds of climate catastrophe could be crossed. The climate catastrophists call them tipping points, climactic tipping points, never faced before, never faced before by humanity, never. And the tipping points include, here we go, are you ready? Are you sitting down? I know you're already scared. I don't want you to start blubbering. But hold on to yourself. Get a hold of yourself and listen to this. This is serious business. Number one, the collapse of ice sheets. Number two, widespread thawing. Number three, the death of coral reefs. Number four, the collapse of oceanic currents in the North Atlantic. And number five, let's see, Earth is on the verge of five catastrophic tipping points. They don't list number five. That must be the scariest one of all. Now I'm terrified. What's number five? Oh, no. That's the one that's going to get us. It's the one you didn't warn me about. How am I supposed to prepare for the climate crisis tipping point if you don't clue me in as to what it is? I mean, I'm going to do all I can to prevent the collapse of ice sheets, the widespread thawing. That sounds terrible. And I don't want the death of coral reefs. I'll feed them. I'll bring them water. I'll send money to the coral reefs. And the oceanic current in the North Atlantic, I'm all for it. I'm willing to go. And is there somewhere I can donate? Is there a government agency that's in charge of these things? I want to help. But what's number five? We don't know. That's the one I'm scared of. The report, which is called, it's a report called Global Tipping Points Report. Not to put too fine a point on it, but the report was produced by an international team of researchers funded by Bezos Earth Fund. It's the latest in a series of warnings about the most extreme effects of climate change, and it would be expected that you would get a report from researchers funded by Bezos Earth Fund about the end of the Earth, or at least the threat of the end of the Earth, because obviously their continued funding, their funding depends upon, at least a significant threat about the end of the world, or at least general widespread panic about it. And so there you have it. If we find out what number five is, we will get that news out to you as soon as we can, because we want to be part of the solution, not a part of the problem. Right? All right. Now, if it's not a climate catastrophe, if it's not the assassination of Donald Trump, if it's not the unfortunate, untimely passing of a number of high-profile politicians and the threat of violence against democracy that disrupts the 2024 elections, stand by, because it may be aliens! That's right, aliens. Here we have from the Worst Contact file. Not First Contact, the Worst Contact. Journalist and UFO enthusiast Jose Jaime Maussan ushered in a team of scientists who performed a DNA analysis on the non-human alien corpses that we all read about a few months ago down in Mexico, and they found that 30% of the non-human alien corpses' genetic material is, quote, not from any known species. Whoa, that's a mind blower. They've analyzed the DNA. 30% of it is, we don't even know what it's from. How do we know we don't know? Don't ask any questions. We don't know. Okay, the New York Post is reporting that many have expressed skepticism about the veracity of the origins of the mummified figures. The main reason is the uncanny resemblance to Steven Spielberg's E.T. all the way down to the three fingers. But don't look at the three fingers. Look at the DNA analysis. They're real, according to anthropologist Roger Zuniga of San Luis Gonzaga National University in Peru. Because you have to go pretty far flung to find an anthropologist who will say, they're real. He even gave testimony on it. So, I mean, you got that, right? You got testimony from a guy from Peru. He says, quote, there was absolutely no human intervention in the physical and biological formation off these beings. And then he was asked, okay, what do you know about the origin of these beings? And he said he didn't know the origin of the being. Okay, he doesn't know, but the one thing he knows is there was no human intervention. It's nothing like paper mache or nothing like that. There was no human intervention. And we go from there. Now we go to the worst contact file, the CIA. The CIA is, let's see, what are they doing? Oh, they've conducted UFO retrieval missions, according to multiple sources. Interviewed by urinalists at thedailymail.com. One source said, listen to this. One source said 9 apparent non-human craft have been recovered by the U.S. government. 2 of them completely intact. Mm-hmm. I know. Sit down. Please try to contain yourselves. The sources spoke on condition of anonymity to avoid being laughed at by all their friends and family members. So, no, well, they say to avoid reprisals because, you know, anyone who exposes the giant cover-up of the alien contact, they will be, of course, assassinated by the Central Intelligence Agency. Uh-huh. The 3 sources said that a wing of the CIA, their Science Technology Directorate, is orchestrating the collection of what could be alien spacecraft. That's right. They're orchestrating it right now, and it could be alien spacecraft. The claims sound like they come from a science fiction novel, according to the reporter at the Daily Mail. But he says they're part of a growing body of evidence suggesting the U.S. government could be hiding vehicles not made by humans. That's right. In fact, we have second and even some third-hand accounts right here. And, of course, pointing the finger at the CIA. The CIA, according to sources here reporting to the urinalist here at the Daily Mail, the CIA can discern UFOs while they're cloaked. Uh-huh. And they can tell if they're non-human. And when they crash, military units try to salvage the wreckage. How do we know that? Where's Jose from Peru? Do we have any testimony from... I'm sorry, it wasn't Roger Zuniga, sorry. No testimony from Peru on that, but solid second and third hand accounts from people who don't shower regularly and need dental work. But other than that, they're completely normal. They're just like you and me. They just have evidence about aliens. And speaking of that, we have this story was submitted by our worldview mole, Inside Federal Law Enforcement. That's right, we have a mole, Inside Federal Law Enforcement. And there was a posting about announcing an extraterrestrial diplomacy and first contact conference going on. The conference aims to delve into the captivating realm of interstellar diplomatic relations. The conference took place November 29th, several days. And so at least now we can all calm down because now at least we know we're prepared. Some of the people in the know have gotten together. In fact, they brought together a distinguished lineup of experts, visionaries, and pioneers in the field of extraterrestrial diplomacy. Mm-hmm. Yep. The conference was reported to have dispatched a rich exploration of topics, such as an extraterrestrial embassy, the profound role of love in interstellar relations, as well as the latest facts on disclosure. I'm not sure what that means, the latest facts on disclosure. That probably has something to do with the crafts being uncovered and hidden. Uncovered and then hidden by the CIA. One of the speakers was a prominent figure in the realm of extraterrestrial diplomacy. I didn't know there were prominent figures. I didn't know there was a realm. Has there been extraterrestrial diplomacy going on and I wasn't aware of it? I'll bet if you ask this fellow, he will tell you there has been. Anyway, he is a prominent figure in the realm of extraterrestrial diplomacy and strategic planning. We won't say his name for obvious reasons. He has extensive experience in extraterrestrial diplomacy. And well, we can't name him because, I mean, yeah, we don't want him outed with the CIA. They'll come and they'll uncover him and then they'll bury him and hide him. Is there anything else? Oh, the speakers at the conference delved into the tools for an awakening world, emphasizing the profound role of love in fostering interstellar harmony. And that obviously is the key. Love is the key. All you need is love. And they play that song. And we're happy that the prominent figures in interstellar diplomacy are focused on the profound role of love in fostering interstellar harmony. And we look forward to their contribution to the disruption of the 2024 election. Your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us, ladies and gentlemen. It's good to have you with us. And we move on from the worst contact file back towards something resembling reality. Not actual reality. This is from the Weak Religion file. Well, wait, where am I? Let's do this first. From the Weak Religion file, John Burke is a pastor and an author, and he has studied and examined more than 1,000 near-death experiences, and he believes such reports provide faith-building evidence of God and the Bible, and he's the author of a new book. Okay, right there you have to stop. First of all, the story is up on a website called FaithWire, which I have dubbed FakeWire. I've dubbed them Fake Wire for many years, and I believe they're associated with some sort of publishing outfit because they're always hawking some new book about something superstitious about religion and Christianity and God. It's just Fake Wire is what I call it. Anyway, I'm not going to give the title of his book, but part of it is The Love You've Always Wanted, because another thing they do at Fake Wire is they tell people that the whole Bible is all about you. It's all God's love letters to you. It's all about you, and it's all about love. And yeah, the interview was given to CBN. There's red flag number 5 or 7. CBN, another one. What does the good doctor say? No, he's not a doctor. I'm sorry, he's a pastor. He says, a near-death experience is when someone clinically dies, yet either modern medicine or a miracle brings them back. And when they come back, they talk about experiencing the life to come. Yes, and it's always a bright light, and everything's always good. Everyone's always thrilled and happy and wonderful. And he says they are seeing and experiencing the God of Scripture. And looking not only at his love story told through the history of the Bible, but also his heart characteristics and his mystery and his majesty and all the swirling colors and everything wonderful. And all the other plastic church platitudes. of a modern pastor, which a modern pastor is defined as a man relatively unfamiliar with the Bible. He's familiar with the text. He knows the words. He can even quote the verses, chapter and verse. But he doesn't know the story, and he's easily distracted by bright, shiny, and colorful objects. Like most of the people in the pews. He said, says Pastor John Burke, who's written a book about near-death experiences to show you how much God loves you. He says those who have near-death experiences are seeing God are seeing God's reality in an extra-dimensional way. Ooh. What's perhaps most remarkable, the guy hawking the book says, is the similarities in those experiences. He believes these happenings back the Bible narrative and provide proof to non-believers. Folks, people having near-death experiences are not experiencing God's reality any more than you are. You're experiencing God's reality right now. This is all real. And just because you're not hallucinating doesn't mean that it's not interesting or worth writing about or even talking about. And the similarities in the experiences of near-death experiences are because they've all heard about other near-death experiences. And so, whatever. I mean, people generally aren't that creative. They tend to copy the pastor goes on to say, when I first heard these stories, I was an agnostic. Not about the Bible, about these stories. But as an engineer, he says, I got thinking, I started to see evidence, and I came to faith. Not in the Bible, but in the near-death experiences. He always had faith. He believes non-Christians can see God through these experiences. And Christians, too, can get valuable lessons about the Lord's love. So I would just say to the pastor, you know, keep your book. I've seen the love of the Lord. The cross showed me the love. Okay? The cross of Jesus Christ and what he did there showed me the love more clearly than any strange dreams that I might have on the edge of consciousness. And frankly, should not be compared to. The love shown on the cross should not be compared to fever dreams that I might have on the precipice of life and death. But, you know, perhaps some people will believe, and I don't know. I guess I don't want to discredit. I mean, maybe a complete evolutionist brainwashed in the government schools hears about a near-death experience from someone who believes in God, and maybe it opens a door. I don't know. It's frankly embarrassing to me, but I guess I'll just move on from that, and we'll just go into. Well, wait. Before I do that, I've got to talk about the videos. Now, I talked about the 5 chipping points for the climate catastrophe. We did a show on climate change over at Real Science Radio. We did 3 shows, I think, and one still yet to air with Dr. Paul Homan, where he basically exposes the dishonesty of the representation of greenhouse gases, the climate in general, and he puts it all in terms that a third grader can understand. It's fantastic. For those of you who send your kids to government schools, that means terms even your 12th grader can comprehend. So anyway, we put the show out on the podcast, and we'd already done a vaccine show that got banned, blocked, disappeared off YouTube. And on that show, all we did was question the government recommendations on all the childhood vaccinations and just told people to do their own homework before giving all these shots to your kids, you know. That show was banned off YouTube within 24 hours. And so I assumed that the climate change interview would be banned as well. And I was so convinced it would be banned that I even bet the producer a steak dinner that it would be banned. And it wasn't banned. It's still up. And on the climate crisis show, We basically called everyone involved with the climate hysteria a bunch of hysterical liars, Marxists. And I mean, we really took them apart and destroyed the scientific aspects of their argument. We didn't just question it. Dr. Homan annihilated it. And so I thought that show would be banned, but it wasn't. So I have to ask, why the double standard? Why do they ban a show on vaccines, just questioning and telling people to do their own homework, but they don't ban a show that dismantles the ludicrous position that mankind is on the verge of destroying the planet? Anyway, I've learned a lesson that I was just naive. You can never bet on the piety of the left being based in actual moral conviction. That, I was just naive. I thought that they had a, cogent morality guiding them. I assumed that they would protect their ministry to save Mother Earth. That's the climate change ministry. I assumed that they would protect that more than the ministry to save human beings, which is the vaccine ministry. I mean, the leftists, don't they say that the too many human beings is the major problem? So you would think that any disinformation threatening Mother Earth would be spiked faster than disinformation that might save some human beings who are going to go on to destroy the planet anyway. I mean, the left, don't they claim to love Mother Earth more than even their own lives? Well, maybe not their own lives, but more than the lives of other people. That's, they certainly claim that. I mean, there's too many people. Isn't the population crisis one of the reasons there's a climate crisis? Anyway, so you'd think they'd move to protect Mother Earth from our hostile onslaught of misinformation over at Real Science Radio, even faster than they move against just questions about vaccines. But no. No, they didn't. And the part I hadn't considered is the money. I'm naive. I'm actually a true believer. I believe in Jesus Christ and the Bible, and I'm willing to actually put that out there and lay it on the line and sacrifice something for it if that becomes necessary. Sacrifice money, liberty, my life. Maybe, I don't know if I have that kind of courage, but I mean, this is real for me, so I assume it's real for them, but I forgot it's not real for them. It's mostly about money and power and lording it over people. And I hadn't considered the money. Pfizer and Moderna are funding a campaign to squelch any questions about the vaccines, about any vaccines. It's big money they're paying. While Mother Earth relies strictly on the piety of the left. And when there's money involved, Mother Earth ends up taking a back seat. And so you can go to Real Science Radio on YouTube and you can listen to Dr. Paul Homan, PhD, just annihilate and dismantle the climate hysterics. But if you want to see a video on, you know, maybe I shouldn't give my kid every vaccine the government. If you just want to see that video, you have to go over to Rumble because YouTube banned it. Anyway, so in doing some research on that, I realize now that if it weren't for pharmaceutical advertising, there would be no such thing as television. I was at a friend's house where they leave the TV on in the background, which I don't like that, especially when it's was Good Morning America or the Today Show or something like that. Something that lowers your IQ by 5 or 10% for every hour you listen to it. And I realized after 3 or 4 commercial breaks that if it wasn't for pharma advertising, there would be no television. There would certainly be no news, no morning shows. There would be no cable news. They're everywhere. And since we got rid of our TV, I think maybe I hadn't really noticed it. Because I used to consume a fairly regular diet of television. And now that I haven't for a number of months, it's really obvious that, wow, look at all the drug commercials. Like, every other commercial is a drug. It's either something to, it's either a drug or it's something to eat or something to wash your body or your house with. And so, you know, the way to become the richest, is to make a profit on what's in everybody's kitchen cabinet. That's kind of the old axiom, you know. What's in your kitchen cabinet and what's in your bathroom? It's a consumable item that we know you're going to use. And so the richest corporations in the world make their money on that stuff. The soap and the food that you eat and all the consumables that you have to live like a civilized human being. And the folks at Big Pharma, they want your medicine cabinet to feel as essential to you as your kitchen cabinet. Hey, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney, and welcome back. We're circling third and heading for home, and there we've done that, and now we move to Trump derangement syndrome. Oh, another Trump derangement syndrome story, but this one not on the left. No, this is different. Do you folks remember, if you may be familiar with the scripture, Peter's confession in Matthew chapter 16, when Jesus asked Peter, who do you say that I am? And Peter says, you're the Son of the living God. And Jesus responds and says, upon this rock I'll build my church. That's that rock, by the way, being his divine identity and Peter's recognition of it. And then he says, the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. Jesus says of his church. Dissenter.com reports that this central biblical Christian story in the Bible is, they say, it's not a tool for political endorsements or personal elevation. Well, I don't know where they've been for the last 50 years. There's not a single part of the Bible that hasn't been appropriated for just such things. But they say, maybe they mean it shouldn't be, and I agree, it shouldn't be. They go on to say there's an idolatrous sect that is growing in the political realm around politicians, particularly Donald Trump. That's right. Earlier this month, a group of hundreds of pastors out in Iowa gathered around Donald Trump to pray for him, and at least one of the pastors could be heard citing Peter's confession, praying that the gates of hell shall not prevail against President Trump. And so the folks at Dissenter are rightly offended by that. Can you see a bunch of these evangelical pastors? 999 out of 1,000 who are not qualified to be in the pulpit, all circling Donald Trump, going into hallucinations and speaking in tongues and flopping around on the ground and praying that the gates of hell shall not. I'd like to see video on that. I want to know if any of them were speaking in tongues. So this is Trump derangement syndrome on the right. Uh-huh. And, you know, when all of the mainline Christian denominations, when they all get together and they bow before a relatively crude, vulgar Democrat and call him the best hope to save America, you know how far America has fallen. And the church in America, the Christian church in America, it's just embarrassing. The moral majority and the focus on the family wing of I don't want to say alleged Christianity because, I mean, but I don't know. I mean, that the whole moral majority focus on the family wing, they've always been a bunch of theological lightweights and phonies making a living on the fake Christianity of the carnal. That's, I mean, I don't want to put it too bluntly, but that's what they are. Of whom Trump is the ultimate human expression. The carnality of Christian people is ultimately expressed physically in the political career of Donald Trump. And he's the ultimate expression of all of that. And whoever organized this prayer, whatever, in Iowa, it's just embarrassing. Get out of here with that, Donald Trump, man. So from there, let's go to the Great Awakening file. Great Awakening, at least we hope for a Great Awakening. Elon Musk, every time Elon Musk says something conservative, every conservative news outlet reports it as if Elon Musk has publicly declared his faith in Jesus Christ and has decided to donate his significant fortune to the forwarding of the gospel. And conservative politics, of course, and the election of Republicans. Anyway, it's really weird, the effect. You know what it is? And I've noticed this about people. Rich people have a certain effect on people, on most people. And they just go weak in the knees. I'm not sure what it is. Musk has this effect. He tweeted against some leftist maniac, said that there's too many people and there's a population crisis. So Musk tweets that arguing in favor of reducing humanity is arguing for genocide. The unborn have no voice. That's Musk's tweet. And the folks over at lifenews.com, who are a part of what I just described. Lifenews.com is a part of the moral majority focus on the family wing of Christianity that make their money on Christian carnality. That is Life News. They now make a better living regulating the killing of unborn children than anyone who was ever out in the street standing for the God-given right to life ever made. Life News makes a much better living, much more comfortable living, regulating the murder of innocent children. And so they jump all over the story and they put a big headline. Musk condemns population control, complains how unborn children have no voice. And they're just all so excited about Elon Musk saying something that, I mean, if you haven't realized this by like ninth grade, you're just not a good person. And you're probably not a Christian if you don't realize that the unborn have no voice. I mean, they're being slaughtered by the millions all over the world and in your own neighborhood. So, but anyway, pray for Elon Musk. I suppose pray for the shills behind lifenews.com. Pray for them as well. They need it as much as Elon. But we pray that Elon Musk will respond to the gospel. Because, you know, at some point, the heathens tend to push it too far and they get blowback from God. Just because God is who he is and his story is what it is and his testimony is as powerful as it is, eventually the heathens get blowback from him and it tends to come in waves that utterly demolish them. It's happened over and over and over again throughout history. When it seems like the dark forces of tyranny and wickedness are going to be victorious, the natural algorithm of God's authority and power blows back on his enemies, and they are judged and defeated. And we would welcome Elon Musk to be a part of that, but we're going to be a part of it either way. Whether we have his billions or millions or whatever he has left, trillions. All right. So meanwhile, speaking of regulating the murder of innocent people, let's go to Texas where a judge last Wednesday A judge declared that he would allow a Texas woman who's 20 weeks pregnant, 21 now, to have an abortion. That's right. Kate is a mother of two. This is according to nationalreview.com. Kate is a mother of two. She learned that her fetus has a genetic condition that means there's a 95% chance her fetus won't survive. So she wants to kill it. Now, wait a second. Because killing it could help her preserve her ability to have another child later who might live longer. Texas law makes it illegal to perform such an abortion in Texas because it doesn't meet the specific circumstances under which the killing of innocent people is allowed in Texas. And so there's a court fight about it. Doctors told her continuing her pregnancy. Listen to this. Doctors told her continuing her pregnancy would affect her health and fertility. And she has had to seek treatment at the emergency room several times during the pregnancy. And we have the district judge Maya said, quote, the idea that Kate wants to desperately be a parent and this law might cause her to lose that ability is shocking, said the judge. Well, she's already a parent. She's a mother of two. We were told that at the beginning of the story in order to get us to feel sorry for her and to know that she's not a radical froth-at-the-mouth pro-abort. She has two kids that she hasn't killed. She just wants to kill this one because it will preserve her ability to have another one, according to her doctors, who say it will affect her fertility, but they don't actually know that. No doctor knows what will or won't or... Well, they have a pretty good idea, but they don't know. But the folks at National Review report what the doctors said, as most of us hear what doctors say report, as if it's Moses come down from the mountain etched in stone. It's not. Anyway, that was Wednesday last week. Friday, the Supreme Court of Texas temporarily stayed the ruling. And so they're just going to keep arguing about whether or not this particular child can be killed. And if this particular child meets the particular conditions under which an innocent person can be killed for the convenience of another person. This is what's left of the pro-life movement. Is where do we draw the line and who gets killed, who doesn't get killed, and how can we make sure that when we do the killing, that nobody feels bad about it because we went according to the rules that we all agreed to. That's it. So the thing about killers, so they write rules around how and when and where you can kill a child, and a lot of the abortionists and people who are in the child killing industry, they'll lie and they'll they'll stretch the truth enough to fit just about any abortion into whatever exception you give them. But killers hate having to lie regarding the murders they commit. They would much prefer that it be legal. And so I know it's a strange thing about human nature. People who murder other people, especially in large systematic murders, holocausts over the course of decades, right? Mass murder, genocides. They don't want to lie about it. They want it to be called legal. And more than even legal, what they really want, what they desperately desire, is that it be declared good. It's like Hitler before he dismembered Czechoslovakia, he first wanted to make sure that he was going by all the rules and all the agreements that he had made agreements with France and with England, and they signed all the papers in the dark of the night, and it was all declared legal. That's what he wanted. And had he won World War II, he would have made sure that everything he did was called good. And instead of Winston Churchill being revered today, it would be Hitler, yeah. Right? Because, well, that's the nature of evil. Speaking of that, we go to North Korea, where North Korean leader Kim Jong-un hosted the National Mothers Meeting. up there in North Korea. He gave a speech regarding the fertility rate, which has been in a steady decline for the past decade up in North Korea. He's concerned about the future of his country. And at one point, he was even seen dabbing his eyes and weeping. That's right. Now, that may have been just the drugs that he's on, but it's possible that he was moved to tears knowing that he won't be able to pillage the next generation because the next generation just may not come up, and that's bothersome for him. This is, did I say this from the old-fashioned criminal file? Yeah, Kim Jong-un, an old-fashioned criminal. He wants to rob and enslave his own people, but the people he wants to kill, those are foreigners. He wants to keep his own at least itinerant so that he can take advantage of them. Unlike the criminally insane pile of perverts who seized Western civilization and seem to be on a murder-suicide pact, for crying out loud. Kim Jong-un, an old-fashioned criminal. Meanwhile, Joe Biden is threatening to take lunch money away. That's right, a new Biden rule, according to Just the News, forces schools to comply with gender ideology or risk losing federal money for school lunches. Uh-huh. That's right, and this is just the first of a slew of new rules tying federal education funding to far-left policies. So I just want to stop and say to folks at Just the News, federal education funding is a far-left policy. This is how bad it is. The right is complaining that the leftist welfare state is not being fair to those of us on the right. It's just embarrassing. Just embarrassing. The U.S. Department of Agriculture handles federal help for school lunches. It's like, are you kidding me? That's how the Department of Agriculture pretends as if they actually produce food. That's how they ameliorate their consciences over the bureaucratic no-show jobs, and they just administer funding and they say, we're buying poor kids lunches and helps them sleep at night, but I'm telling you, it's all leftist, godless, awful, embarrassing. But we're here at the Weekly Worldview, and we'll be here to analyze all of this and everything else as we document the resistance against the godless and the creeps and the perverts and the weirdos, and point everyone to Jesus Christ. Should he tarry, we'll return next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.